"All for one what?" said Nobby. The sergeant sighed. "Come on, then."
"Oh, all right."
They staggered out into the alley. It was empty.
"Where did he go?" said Nobby.
Carrot stepped out of the shadows, grinning all over his face. "Knew I could rely on you," he said. "Follow me."
"Something odd about that boy," said Colon, as they limped after him. "He always manages to persuade us to follow him. Have you noticed?"
"All for one what?" said Nobby.
"Something about the voice, I reckon."
"Yes, but all for one what?" The patrician sighed, and carefully marking his place, laid aside his book. To judge from the noise, there seemed to be an awful lot of excitement going on out there. It was highly unlikely any palace guards would be around, which was just as well. The guards were highly trained men, and it would be a shame to waste them. He would need them later on. He padded over to the wall and pushed a small block that looked exactly like all the other small blocks. No other small block, however, would have caused a section of flagstone to grind ponderously aside. There was a carefully chosen assortment of stuff in there: iron rations, spare clothes, several small chests of precious metals and jewels, tools, and there was a key. Never build a dungeon you couldn't get out of. The patrician took the key and strolled over to the door. As the wards of the lock slid back in their well-oiled grooves, he wondered again whether he should have told Vimes about the key. But the man seemed to have got so much satisfaction out of breaking out. It would probably have been positively bad for him to have told him about the key. Anyway, it would have spoiled his view of the world. He needed Vimes and his view of the world. Lord Vetinari swung the door open and silently strode out into the ruins of his palace. They trembled as, for the second time in a couple of minutes, the city rocked. The dragon kennels exploded. The windows blew out. The door left the wall ahead of a great billow of black smoke and sailed into the air, tumbling slowly to plough into the rhododendrons. Something very energetic and hot was happening in that building. More smoke poured out, thick and oily and solid. One of the walls folded in on itself, and then another one toppled sluggishly onto the lawn. Swamp dragons shot determinedly out of the wreckage like champagne corks, wings whirring frantically. Still the smoke unrolled. But there was something in there, some point of fierce white light, that was gently rising. It disappeared from view as it passed a stricken window, and then with a piece of roof tile still spinning on the top of his head, Errol climbed above his own smoke and ascended into the skies of Ankh Morpork. The sunlight glinted off his silver scales as he hovered about 100 feet up, turning slowly, balancing nicely on his own flame. Vimes, awaiting death on the plaza, realized that his mouth was hanging open. He shut it again. There was absolutely no sound in the city now but the noise of Errol's ascent. "They can rearrange their own plumbing," Vimes told himself bemusedly, "to suit circumstances. He's made it work in reverse. But his thingies, his genes, surely he must have been halfway to it anyway. No wonder the little bugger has got such stubby wings. His body must have known he wasn't going to need them, except to steer. Good grief, I'm watching the first ever dragon to flame backwards." He risked a glance immediately above him. The great dragon was frozen, its enormous bloodshot eyes concentrating on the tiny creature. With a challenging roar of flame and a pummeling of air, the king of Ankh Morpork rose, all thought of mere humans forgotten. Vimes turned sharply to Lady Ramkin. "How do they fight?" he said urgently. "How do dragons fight?"
They just flap at each other and blow flame," she said. "Swamp dragons, that is. I mean, who's ever seen a noble dragon fight?" She patted her nightie. "I must take some notes. I've got my memo book somewhere."
"In your nightshirt? It's amazing how ideas come to one in bed," I've always said.
Flames roared into the space where Errol had been, but he wasn't there. The king tried to spin in midair. The little dragon circled in an easy series of smoke rings, weaving a cat's cradle in the sky with the huge adversary gyrating helplessly in the middle. More flames, hotter and longer, stabbed at him and missed. The crowd watched in breathless silence.
"Hello, Captain," said an ingratiating voice.
Vimes looked down. A small and stagnant pond, disguised as Nobby, grinned sheepishly up at him.
"I thought you were dead," he said.
"We're not," said Nobby.
"Oh, good."
There didn't seem much else to say.
"What do you reckon on the fight, then?"
Vimes looked back up. Smoke trails spiralled across the city.
"I'm afraid it's not going to work," said Lady Ramkin.
"Oh, hello, Nobby."
"Afternoon, ma'am," said Nobby, touching what he thought was his forelock.
"What do you mean it's not going to work?" said Vimes. "Look at him go. It hasn't hit him yet."
"Yes, but his flame has touched it several times. It doesn't seem to have any effect. It's not hot enough, I think. Oh, he's dodging well, but he's got to be lucky every time. It has only got to be lucky once."